Plane travel is safer because of X-ray developments.
Your automobile tires are stronger and better because of X-ray developments.
This is the story of Science and People, a story told by two men, Lou Audrieth, who conducts this weekly conversation, and his guest for today, Dr. George L. Clark, professor of chemistry. Today, they're going to tell us about some of the latest developments in X-ray chemistry. Now, Lou Audrieth.
Thank you, Harold. We know, of course, that there are many tools which are used today by the scientists in exploring the unknown and in making life better for living through science. Every day we hear of new discoveries, new equipment, new materials which are used to investigate those things which are very, very large, those things which we might say are out in the macrocosmos, and those things which are very, very small, the microcosmos, as it were. Now, today we have one of the pioneers in the field of investigation of things that are very, very small before our microphone. Professor George L. Clark of the Department of Chemistry is one of the pioneers in the field of X-ray research. And X-rays represents one of these fairly recent new tools used to explore things which we cannot see, which we cannot perceive, even by our most powerful microscopes. Now, Professor Clark, what do we mean by X-rays?
By X-rays, Dr. Audrieth, we mean a type of radiation. A radiation which is very similar to ordinary light, except that it is invisible, and therefore it has wavelengths, as we call them, which are very much shorter, or frequencies of vibration which are very much higher.
Now, I understand, Professor Clark, this is a very memorable sort of a year in the field of X-ray development. Why is it that your society, you in particular, look upon this particular year as one in which you're going to do something about bringing X-rays before the eyes of the public to a greater extent than ever before?
Yes, I'm particularly happy after 28 years in this field to call attention to the fact that this is the 55th anniversary of the discovery of X-rays by Wilhelm Conrad Röntgen, a German physicist, and also the 105th anniversary of his birth.
Well, now, these rays which were discovered by Röntgen some 55 years ago, what exactly are they used for at the present time? We hear X-rays quite frequently, of course, and I gather that they're useful for many, many purposes. Would you mind to tell us something about that?
That's true. The ordinary folks like ourselves know X-rays best from the medical applications, diagnosis particularly. So we have a great field of medical diagnosis. Then, of course, of cancer therapy, the treatment of disease by means of these shortwave radiations. Then, in addition, of course, there is a wide industrial field of diagnosis, using the same technique that we do for examination of broken bones or bad teeth, in which we want to examine maybe as much as 15 or 20 inches of solid steel.
Yes, but Dr. Clark, I understand that you are one of the pioneers in the application of X-rays to industrial research. The field that you just described now is called radiography, is it not?
Yeah.
But that isn't what you specifically want to discuss this morning, is it?
We are particularly interested in research in the examination by means of X-rays, by the technique that we call diffraction, of the ultimate architectural plan, the building plan of solid materials.
In other words, you can actually, by means of X-ray, define the ultimate particulate structure of materials?
Exactly. We can find the arrangement in space of the ultimate atoms or molecules that make up all matter.
Well, now, I understand that the instruments that you use for this purpose are, in some respects, quite similar to those which are used by the doctor and by the shoe store salesman, for instance. But on the other hand, they're considerably different also. Just what sort of a setup do you have in order to get these X-rays? What do you accomplish? Or just how do you set up an instrumentation in order to get these very penetrating forms of radiation, which you say are much like light?
Yes. Well, for the research on architectural plan, structure of materials, it is necessary to have a single wavelength, a very pure beam, so to speak. And in this respect, therefore, the technique differs from that usually employed for very great penetration. So that our concern in our laboratory is with relatively low voltages. X-rays are produced, of course, by the impact of electrons on targets. But in order to produce this single wavelength beam, or monochromatic beam, it is essential for us to use quite low voltages in comparison with others that are being used.
Well, I understand, as a matter of fact, that X-rays are produced in this, 300 million volt betatron that we have here on the campus? Is that also a device of the same sort that you employ?
Exactly so. One of the greatest achievements and the finest pages of science is in the development by Dr. Kirst and his group of the 300 million volt betatron, which produces X-rays at 300 million volts, and therefore an X-ray beam of almost unimaginable penetrating power.
Well, now, of course, we could talk about that subject and talk about the mechanism of producing X-rays for the rest of this rather short period. But people come to you in droves for so-called X-ray investigation of structures of materials. Government representatives, the armed services, industry. We all come to you to determine just how these particles are set up, how they're arranged in space. Now, some of these investigations that you have carried out have been tremendously useful. I understand that you've carried out a study very recently on carbon blacks. So, what are carbon blacks, Dr. Clark?
Carbon blacks are, just as you might suspect, something like the soot, which is produced in a candle flame. But were it not for carbon blacks, which are a very poor elementary crystalline form of graphite, were it not for carbon blacks, we would have no tires, no rubber tires.
Oh, you mean to tell me that carbon black is actually incorporated in our automobile tires?
In all tires, it is the incorporation of carbon black with the native or the synthetic rubber that makes possible the resistance to abrasion and wear. Well, which is essential, of course, for good tires.
Well, now, Dr. Clark, just where has X-rays helped in this whole matter of carbon blacks in automobile tires?
It has been necessary to understand what it is about the structure of carbon blacks that causes this abrasion resistance, and why one carbon black behaves beautifully in that respect, and another carbon black may be perfectly useless. So that by means of our X-ray diffraction techniques, it has been possible recently for the first time on behalf of the United States Government Rubber Reserve to set up certain specifications on based upon the ultimate structure of the ultimate particles and their shape, which determine how good a bond is made to the rubber and how good abrasion resistance we're able to obtain.
Well, then we can definitely say that as a result of your work here in the field of X-rays, that our tires are better, wear longer, and as a matter of fact, that our travel, let's say on the highways, is therefore safer because of the fact that we have better tires. Now, I understand that you also have done some work on airplane propellers. This seems like a long sort of a path from, let's say, carbon blacks and tires to airplane propellers. But people come into your office every once in a while or lugging an airplane propeller with them, and you take that and investigate it. Now, what do you do in that investigation?
X-rays are able to detect the imperfections and the strain developed in crystalline matter. As some years ago, when the aluminum alloy propellers were first coming into wide use, there were occasional failures, and there was no apparent reason for that. However, by this very extreme method of examination of texture and structure, we were able to show that strain was developing in the crystals making up the propeller. And we could very easily determine then when this strain had reached a dangerous stage.
You mean to tell me they could bring a propeller into your office, for instance, or your laboratory, you would put it up on your X-ray machine and tell them 100 hours more of use in the air? Is that right, Dr. Clark?
Exactly. The number of planes
that's amazing.
Came, number of planes came to the airport here, and we would take the propeller off, take it to the X-ray machine, look at it, and then decide whether to put on a new one or whether this was still safe to use.
Well, that's really an accomplishment, too. By X-rays, to be able to, let's say, determine how long a propeller could be used, and also to indicate to the manufacturers of the propellers how they might improve their product in order to make it safer for those who have to fly in planes. As a matter of fact, this was done sometime before the war, was it not, Dr. Clark?
Yes, it was. It was. It ultimately led, of course, to very much better knowledge of the structure and the heat treatment and other ways of manufacturing these propellers. During the war, we took these techniques right on to the study of airplane motor casting, both in terms of gross faders, like little microscopic cracks, or of the strain in these castings. By means of such technique, it was then possible to so perfect the structure of these airplane motor castings for our fighting planes that it was then possible to double the horsepower of these motors without increasing the weight and assure safe performance. Well, even in the most extreme conditions.
Well, here again, you have a real accomplishment to your credit. In other words, be able to not only protect our pilots in the air, but also to make it possible for them to fly longer missions and to go farther and to travel more safely in every respect. Now, Dr. Clark, I understand that you also have in progress at the present time a research investigation for the Signal Corps, which has to do with low-temperature storage batteries. Do you want to say a word about that?
Yes, that has been a most interesting study. For reasons I think that might be apparent to most people, it has been very desirable to have a storage battery which would operate at least at 65 degrees below zero.
Why 65 degrees below zero, Dr. Clark?
Well...
Oh, of course, I know the answer. Go ahead.
It's very necessary to have not only our signal apparatus work at those low temperatures, maybe up in Alaska or on the Arctic Circle, but also to be able to crank up tanks and trucks and things of that sort.
Well, now, how does X-rays help in this particular problem, Dr. Clark?
We have made a very, very intensive study of the structure of the plates of the storage battery as a function of temperature, and we have discovered why the ordinary storage battery we use in our automobiles simply won't work at that low temperature.
Yes, I think most of us agree with you on that score.
But on the basis of the facts so discovered, of the properties, the structures, and the textures of negative and positive plates, we are able to go ahead to revise the composition and the general structure of the plates so that they will operate at 65 degrees below zero, and such batteries are now being made.
Well, that's an amazing accomplishment. Now, Dr. Clark, I wish we could talk on for a couple of hours on this very interesting subject of yours. I understand that you're also working on polymeric materials, that all these new types of rubbers that you make here in the laboratory are being investigated so far as the building blocks that comprise them by your X-ray procedure. And that one of the big jobs that you have on your hand at the present time is the question of setting up some kind of a measuring device for radiation, because the atomic bomb, I understand, also gives us the same type of rays, these X-rays, the gamma rays and radiation, that these are some of the problems which you are investigating. Well, we hope to hear from you again on some future broadcast. In the meantime, thank you very much for this very interesting discussion of what X-rays is doing in order to make life safer, better, for us in many respects.
It's a pleasure, Dr. Audrey.
The research in X-ray chemistry being carried on by Dr. Clark and his associates is just one of the many phases of scientific research and study being carried on by your state university, the University of Illinois. Next week, our guest will be Dr. Robert H. Baker, head of the Department of Astronomy. So join us again at that time for another story of science and people. This is the University of Illinois Radio Service.